Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Excuse me, Representative Roscoe, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce the great folks up there from Skills USA in red. Please stand up. It's a partnership of students, teachers, and industry to make sure that this great country of ours has a skilled workforce with all the trades. And I really appreciate that. As I was going to college studying useless liberal arts, I would take 9 courses in welding. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the House.
Is this?
Nice to see you here today. Chairman Hilloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor. There's two events that I want to call to your attention tonight. Is the Arts Council event out at Little America at 6 p.m. It promises to be a great program. So if you haven't got your tickets, I'm sure that they would help you out. But please try and attend. And then on Sunday afternoon, the 15th, this Sunday, at the New Laramie County Library at 2 o'clock, the Laramie County Historical Society will be hosting, along with the American Heritage Center, a show and talk on Heart Mountain. So it should be very interesting. So if you're in town Sunday afternoon, we'd love to have you down there.
Are there any other announcements? We are on third reading amendment number 25 to House Bill 1. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't feel like I did a really good job of presenting this idea at the second reading amendment, and so I'd like to give a little bit further background. There was a landmark Supreme Court decision.
Representative Harvey, have you moved the amendment?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Mr. Speaker, I would move Amendment 25, third reading Amendment 25 to House Bill 1 and request your favorable consideration. In 1999, the Supreme Court ruled that states must serve those persons with dual diagnosis, that is, people with developmental disabilities and mental illness, that they must be served in their communities rather than institutions. That Supreme Court ruling in combination with two of our state Supreme Court decisions. One of them was the Weston versus the Wyoming Training School. The other one was Chris S. and the Wyoming State Hospital. And because of those two diagnoses, those two court case settlements, there were many people who were duly diagnosed that were placed in the community in accordance with the stipulation agreement. We just barely came out of that stipulation agreement. And what that says is that people with dual diagnosis, people with mental illness, and people with disabilities must be served in the community. So we have people that are on the developmental disability waiver program that are receiving services that are quantified by their developmental disabilities. We tried for 3 years to get the Division of Developmental Disabilities to find an adequate assessment tool that would say what kind of supervision the people with dual diagnosis, that is developmental disabilities and mental illness, what kind of supervision do they need and what does that cost? This amendment just simply addresses that. It directs the Division of Developmental Disability to find the instrument. We know that they exist. Other states use them. Our state has failed to come up with an adequate tool that would quantify what the needs are. And you'll notice on the end of this amendment, I took out the part that said that they would prepare a budget for the next biennium. We just simply need to know. The courts have told us serve these people in the community. Because of the new cost-based reimbursement system, they're only being reimbursed for the developmental part of their disability. The other part of their disability is mental illness, and we have no tool to honestly quantify. These people were served before we went to the cost-based reimbursement system. These people were served through negotiating rates. And we took the ability away for the community providers to negotiate rates that met the need of the people who had these dual diagnoses. The Centers for Medicaid and Medicare are the ones who directed the state of Wyoming to go to a cost-based reimbursement system, and we have. But this is the piece that's missing. We cannot quantify what it takes to serve these people. And I would urge your consideration of this. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and for the amendment. Folks, there's some things about the Developmental Disability Waiver Program that really bother me in terms of the funding model that we worked hard to achieve, and it doesn't work well. We don't have a directed focus on how to correct what's going on. It seems to me that on the DD waivers, if someone comes off the waiver, someone should go on. Well, that's not the way it works. And that's not directly related to this amendment, as I understand it. But maybe this will be a step towards addressing those larger issues, and I think this is a good amendment here to approach this in this focused way. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of amendment number 25 to House Bill 1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passed. Chief Clerk, there was no money, huh? Okay. Okay. We're on third reading amendment number 19, Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. And Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 19 to House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a general fund increase in the amount of $375,000. This increase will cover 40 senior citizen centers across the state of Wyoming and assist 77,000 residents of Wyoming that are 60 years and older. Let me just briefly make a quick statement here. The general fund increase of $375,000 will be to will be spread across the 40 senior citizen centers to provide senior operations, maintain competitive wages to retain their quality employees, a couple years ago, there was a survey taken by the senior, it's called the Wyoming Senior Services Board, as to supplemental funding, wage supplemental funding. That survey was used to by this body to determine an appropriated amount. However, there were several centers, and there's a piece of paper in your box, in your tray. It's got the Wyoming Association of Senior Project Directors, and it should be in your tray. And there were a number of centers all the centers are based, their funding is based on a per-mail serving. And the survey asked these centers to provide a supplemental cost. There were several centers that apparently were not able to receive the entire amount that they had stated in a survey. These dollars will be used to assist those centers remain competitive for this fiscal year. And I will stop there, Mr. Chairman, and allow the House to work its magic. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their first time? Representative Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, on page 21 of your bill, House Bill 1, the Appropriations Committee already provided for $2.8 million to be distributed amongst all of these different senior centers. So I would recommend that you vote no on this.
Anyone else for their first time? Or second time? Question being called. We are voting on third reading amendment number 19 to House Bill 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 19 has failed. We are on third reading amendment number 23. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 23 to House Bill 1. And what this is about, Wyoming Public Broadcasting, and you should have a handout in your box that looks like that, and showing those towers. And Mr. Speaker, this tower is on Limestone Mountain. They no longer broadcast with analog transmission, and it has that 75-foot analog antenna on top of it. Tower, and what the $75,000 would do is remove that analog antenna from the tower, and just to take the weight off the tower and not have ice build up. And it is a pretty old tower. They was given by one of the broadcasting companies here in Wyoming 26 years ago, and I don't know how long it had been up before that. But it's been up there a long time. It's an old tower, and this just might keep it from collapsing and keep us from having to build another tower. And I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Thank
Chairman
you,
Mr. Illaway.
Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I love these people, and I've appeared on their programs any number of times, and I love the general manager, and I have great empathy, but this is not the time on and against the amendment. This is not the time to spend $75,000. If the tower's been up there for a while, it'll probably, I hope, hold up another little while, and maybe we can come back in either the budget session or the following year and do the job. But I don't think this is the time to do it.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this amendment. In my previous life, I was an iron worker. Used to work on transmission towers. In fact, I've been on top of Limestone, and I've changed the lights on the top of that tower. It's a 290-foot tower. And the ice loading gets on it, that tower could come down anytime. And by looking at the price of this, to take that antenna down, that is a bargain, believe you me. The price of that could go up anytime, and they'll have to go up there and put a gin pole up there and take her down with a torch, one 20-foot section at a time. So I rise in support. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, did you wish a second time? The question being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 23 is passed. Division being called. All those in favor, please sit, rise. Roll call is in order. Will the chief clerk...
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Could I ask
Chairman McComey?
Why
wait a minute. What is the question about? Is it a procedural question or is it...
It's a procedural question.
Sure.
Mr. Speaker, when we have an affirmative vote on something like this or even a negative vote where it affects the budget or where we're going to have to take a roll call vote, why do we ask for a standing vote? Because we're going to take the vote anyway.
Chairman McComey, I could simply just say that every amendment is passed and we could have a roll call on every one, but to determine whether it's passed or not, I need a division, really. Because if I call it no, then there's nothing happening in the amendment and someone would call division to see if they win. So I understand the comment. The real question is about the roll call on every increase or decrease issue. Maybe we could refine that later on. I hope that answered your question. But Chairman McComey.
Well, Mr. Speaker, my question was just on a positive vote. When you say positive, then and there's money in it, we're automatically going to take the roll call vote.
Pursuant to Rule 13-3B, any amendment to a mirror bill which directly increases or decreases an appropriation by a specific dollar amount requires the roll call. Seems a little odd, but
if it passes.
So we need to first determine whether it passes. Only after a voice vote in which the ayes have prevailed. I called that the ayes prevailed. So, will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Excuse.
Davison excused. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Esquibel. Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim excused. McComey.
Mercer.
No. Meyer.
No.
Miller. Miller?
Excuse.
Miller excused. Millen.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Excuse.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
No.
Steward.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace. Wallace. Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Wallace.
Excused.
Wallace excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 32 ayes, 22 noes, 6 excused.
I'm sorry, what was the vote, Madam Chief Clerk?
32-20.
Thank you.
6-6.
Third reading amendment number 23 has passed. If we'd stand at ease for a moment, please. The next amendment is third reading amendment number 17. I'm sorry, Representative Brown, you were ready and we weren't, so we'll wait till you get there.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is simple. It's about our new prison. I complained when we built it about the location, and my fear is that it's nothing but an economic development project for the nearest city, which is in our neighboring state to the east. So I bring this amendment simply to raise the issue and would urge you to vote in favor of it. It simply says that for contract services, I'm especially concerned about medical care, but there will be other contract services. I simply say that this was an economic development project for a town in Wyoming, and I think the money that's spent there ought to be spent in Wyoming. So I would urge your favorable vote on this amendment.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge you to resist this amendment. Let me just say two things. It's an accident. It's a chance that there happens to be a large town 30-some miles away from the prison location. And this talks specifically about health care to our corrections. This is administered, as I understand it, if I remember correctly, by a large, experienced firm that is national in scope and knows what they're doing. We've had problems in the past with medical services being made available in an adequate fashion when we contract with some other folks. And as medical care goes, let me ask everyone a question. Have any of you or your relatives gone out of state for medical care? And if they did or you did, why'd you do that? You might have wanted good care. You might have wanted the best care that was not available for the particular problem you had in this state, or it was just closer than the care was available in this state. This is a protectionist policy if I ever saw it, and it doesn't work well when we have so many folks living as close to the border as we do, and we happen to have a correction facility close to a border. I doubt if the health care portion would be provided by an outfit from the neighboring state. I urge you to resist this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd urge you to resist this. I don't know why we wouldn't do this for the university or anything else. This is an anti-trade trade thing. We already have contracts in Wyoming that have a 5 or 10% preference on at least highways and some other things. It's completely unnecessary.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here's what I predict will happen, and some of you know where I used to live, where our other prison is located. And some of you know I represented the hospital there for many years. Here's what I predict is going to happen. Our Department of Corrections will hire this firm that was referred to provide health care. They will bid for it, and they will bid it too low. They always do. Then they'll try to take the low price that they have and the extreme position they've put themselves in, and they will go to the local hospital in the community where this new prison is, and they will dicker and beat up on them and beat up on them. And a couple of times, they'll probably get a price reduction until that hospital figures out they're going broke on it. Then that hospital is going to have to do the same thing we did, which is dig their heels in the ground and say, no, we're not going to do it. If you bid it too low, you're going to take the loss, not us. And they will retaliate by going wherever they can get the cheapest medicine. And I predict that that will be out of state. And at that point, it's economic development for a community in another state. That's why the amendment's there. I'd urge your support.
We are voting on third reading Amendment 17 to House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading Amendment number 17 has failed. We are on third reading Amendment number 4.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Despite overwhelming statewide support, I would like to withdraw third reading Amendment number 4 to House Bill 1 in the interest of time.
Third reading amendment number 4 is hereby withdrawn. We are on third reading amendment number 5. Chairman McComey.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1 and request its favorable consideration. If all of you would look on your desks, I had passed out just before lunch
okay.
a handout that's got the talking points that I would not like to do too much talking about it unless you want to ask me some questions about it. I'll get in. I want to talk about what the bill does. And on the back side is a copy of a put together of some budget information, data of appropriations of the totals $4,473,586 that we have spent since 2003 to start the development of a student performance data system and statewide data entry system. On the bottom of the handout is a talks about what they are. They are the amendment builds upon previous legislative efforts to establish statewide student and education information system capability, such as the School Interoperability Framework, better known as SIF. That's the one where different computers with different programs can talk to one another through a master control. The Wyoming Integrated Statewide Education, the WISE system, the data system, and the student-level WISER IDs and staff-level collections of the WISE staff IDs. At the very first paragraph of this, talks about a study that was just done, commissioned by the Department of Education, for an outside person to come in and look at these systems and recommend to them if they're ready to go and if what needs to be done. His recommendation said he thinks maybe it's the time to do it. What this bill does is it appropriates $250,000 for a position, one-time position, and a full-time position, and the necessary equipment to get this up and running. If you read down through the bill, it'll allow the department to reach down into the raw data, into these school districts, gather this raw data up, and put it together, which we believe will help eliminate a lot of the reporting that you've been hearing your school districts complain about. I think that's something we've been working for a considerable time. I was informed by the good assistant superintendent of public instruction that's in charge of this particular project that will take probably 2 years, at least 2 years. He hoped he can do it in 2 years. That's the way he put it to me. That we will have it into all of the 48 school districts by that time. And I think rather than go on through this and make it more lengthy, I'd stand for questions from everybody. Some of the school districts might decide that, well, I don't know if I want the Department of Ed being able to reach down and get into my raw data. And I'm sure there's ways that they can stop that if they want. But we've heard all the complaints about this in the past, about all the reports and all of the other things and what we need to generate. We can even track student performance. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Mr. Speaker.
School Foundation Program funds is S5. Mr. Speaker.
Well, I just wondered why it came at this late date and why we hadn't heard about the need for this study and why it wasn't in a bill. That's all I can think of right now. But
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the bringer of this amendment. And I recognize that, or I understand that there's some matching that comes out of the Department of Education for these funds, but it seems to me with the amount of money that we've put into the education system, if they could come up with half of it, they ought to be able to come up with all of it. I think it's a good program, but I question whether we need to put another $250,000 into it, and that we could still get it done if we just directed the department to get it done with their existing funds.
Chairman Childers, for your first time.
Well, Madam Majority Whip, being that some of us get up early for breakfast over at the Hitch, we had a conversation about this, and the sponsor of the amendment, you know, the data just came in yesterday that explains that they can develop this over the next 2 years, and quite frankly, my understanding of it, it really helps us develop the accountability of the various school districts. That's what the money's supposed to be for, the way I understood it. At least that's what I was told. He's not shaking his head no, so I think I'm correct.
Chairman Semlick, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess just a couple points on this. When I was on the Education Committee, I know there was a lot of interest in auditing the 48 school districts, and the Department of Audit went into a process of trying to get that done, and I kind of lost touch with what exactly happened there, but I know a lot of school districts just told them, we're not going to do it. And if, in fact, they went ahead and did it, I would have thought that some of that information would be available. The second thing, as long as we have a funding model, that applies so much guarantee in a certain way, you know, if we don't like the way local districts are spending the money, then maybe we ought to do it some other way besides a guaranteed funding model. If we go ahead with the funding model like we've used for a number of years, I'm not sure that we're going to have much ability to dictate how that money's being spent. I think accountability in local districts is great. I'm just not sure this is going to get to it. Thank you.
Chairman Berger, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to follow up with the previous speaker, can you tell me if this automation, finishing this project, will assist us with the recalibration that will be taking place in 2010? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harshman, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just rising in support of this amendment. Really just finally finishes what we started, and I think it's the right thing to do. And I think with recalibration, we paid about $1 million the last recalibration just to get salary data that was up to date. And this would actually have all data. And so I think it'd be really beneficial to small school districts because they can have the reports generated right here. If they want to report on their third graders or their second graders, they don't have to, because a lot of small districts don't have the folks to compile research and data. So that part of it. For us as policymakers, we're going to have accurate data. We can look at real-time, accurate data on all, everything we want to look at, and it can be generated right here. And so, really, that's the wave of the future. I mean, my kids right now, I can get online and check their assignments, their homework, read teacher comments. You can have those emailed to you. So this is the way it's going. I think we just use the technology. We've invested a lot in it already, and now it's the point where we just got to make everybody do it. And so I appreciate your support.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time prior to the sponsor of the amendment? Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, to answer some of the questions, why the timing, the good gentleman from Park County, did the answer was right. We just got the report back from the consultant, the outside consultant. It wasn't something that was done in-house. I forgot to mention this is school foundation money. This is not general fund money. I apologize to the body for that. I wrote accountability. We do have our districts. And this really isn't on this, but it was mentioned. We've been through all of the districts now with the accounting from the good gentleman from the Northwest, or well, really, I guess almost the middle of the state over here, my good chairman, friendly chairman, and the second round of the accountants now, where we were having as much as $1 million, but was the schools weren't reporting right and spending right. It's now these reports are starting to come back to the members of the Education Committee with $23,000, $10,000. So we've got that part right. As far as the recalibration is concerned, we need this data for recalibration. And this will help us generate some of this data. We spent thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, as was mentioned, at least at one time over $1 million when we were starting to generate this for 3 or 4 years. I'm not going to say that this is going to be the panacea for the world and to solve all of our problems. But the Department of Education, who I was getting pretty critical of, I do believe has done something here that might give us an opportunity to give some relief to the school districts and give us the information we need to track the accountability that this body's been trying to find and the governor was concerned about.
We are voting. Excuse me, we are voting on third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1 has failed. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 1 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 10. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Standing Committee amendment or third reading amendment number 10 to House Bill 1. And ladies and gentlemen, what this amendment does is changes the funding source from the general fund to the omnibus land income fund for these two state building projects. And we have 10 accounts currently that have funds in them that allow us to do projects for state buildings. In December and again in January, we had it in the general fund, and then it started out in the omnibus, we put it in the general fund, and now since we've been working through the budget, I think that this frees up more money to be available in the general fund at a later date, And that's what these omnibus funds are for, and I would encourage your aye vote.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Question being called. We are on third reading, amendment number 10 to House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Third reading, amendment number 10 is passed. We are on third reading, amendment number 9. Chairman Illaway. That was simply an exchange of funds, not an increase or decrease of funds on number 10.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 1. Absolutely no money in this amendment. What this does is to try and state that if a simple modern class, if we build a new building on the St. Mary's property, that this is a way to state how it should look. We don't need another monstrosity that's to the north of this building. We need some buildings that at least complement the Capitol building and the Capitol district. Unfortunately, the building to the north of us was not designed that way. We're going to spend money to fix it, rehabilitate it. It wasn't designed correctly. Matter of fact, if you didn't know it, it's backwards, because the heat gains on the roof are backwards. Anyway, all this amendment does is to say that the architectural design and construction components shall be separable and both shall be widely advertised and so forth. Both components shall be determined on their merits and their ability to meet the aforementioned goals. The proposed design shall be available for public review and so forth. Just trying to state the obvious that if we build a new building, if and when, that it is comparable to the Capitol and to the district.
Representative Harvey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask the sponsor of the amendment some questions. Have we appropriated money to build a building? Do we have an architect in place? Do we have planning money in place? Why are we creating this policy in a budget amendment to a supplementary budget? How far along are we in the planning of this? Why is it necessary now?
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the bringer of the amendment a couple of questions. Would you define what is intended by simple, modern, classical? I'm not sure that those go together. And my fear is that I think everyone concedes that whatever is built should not compete with the Capitol. Ancillary supportive government buildings, which are essentially office buildings, they shouldn't be monuments to an architect, whether good monuments or bad. So I guess I don't see the need for it. I do appreciate the portion which addresses public comment for 30 days, but the rest of it is, the words are meaningless to me. I would appreciate some clarification. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Throne, for your first time. She's pointing to the Chairman Childers, so it's your first time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I actually have a question for you and a ruling that is the obligation that you cannot commit for future legislators, is it strictly monetary, or is it also in a case like this that you're obligating future legislators on the design of a building? And I think, you know, if it's done 20 years from now, who knows? I mean, is this really proper to do this? You're obligating future legislators by putting this in.
Chairman Childers, it's a good point, and I'm not sure of the answer. So in the interest of time, I would rule that the amendment is germane. However, the question is, do we want to have the debate? Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this amendment, and I apologize, I can't give you a definition of simple, modern, classical building, but I think it's important for the body to know that the City of Cheyenne has adopted ordinances, and I think in our role for historic preservation, and this building, it would, if it ever gets built, will be in my district. It's in an historic district, an historic neighborhood. It's a few blocks from the old governor's mansion. It's very important to the people that I represent that we maintain the historic character as much as we can. A lot of damage has been done over the years in Cheyenne to some of our historic neighborhoods, but we're trying to correct that. So out of respect for the wishes of the City of Cheyenne and the historic districts that our city has created, I would urge you to support this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A simple, modern, classical building. I'm not an architect representative from Teton County who's not listening, but that's all right. I'll still go ahead and tell him he's an architect or whatever, a surveyor. As the good representative from Laramie County discussed, the Capital District is a lot larger than the Capital here. It is the district around here. The other question from the good lady from Lovell, planning is proposed to start in the next year or so. I don't know whether it'll happen in the next 2 years, but this is something that we felt was important so that if planning does begin, that at least they would know some of our wishes, rather than to build something that is completely out of character with the state capitol and the other two state office buildings that are at least, I think, simple, modern, classical buildings, and they'll complement, the new buildings should complement this capital rather than detract.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 1. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 9 has narrowly failed. We are on third reading amendment number 1. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1. What this one does is it doesn't actually change any amounts, but it changes how the money is distributed. On page 44 of the bill, what occurred was they have taken a bunch of money and split it up amongst multiple different projects. And if you go through it, it shows there's 1.4 toward DD Children's Waiver. There's some money to preschool developmentally disabled. There's some money going to some other things. And then what happens at the end of that whole section, it has a subsection C, and subsection C reads the remainder, and it doesn't define what the remainder is. It's just whatever's left over from all those other amounts. The remainder may be expended for any of the following in an amount to be determined by the governor. So, and then what's below that is about seven items, which essentially are wish lists of different things that people wanted funding, but there just wasn't enough. So they put the seven down there, and if anything's left over, those seven will get funded. What this bill does is number one, it changes it to say that the remainder shall be expended in the following priority order. So you take number one there, and whatever's left, we're going to actually spend it on the first one. And then if any is left, we'll go to the second one. And rather than diluting the money amongst seven different things. The other problem is number seven on that list is a big one. It's any other item that the governor thought might be important to fund. That one worries me because, you know, if you have, deficit in the Medicaid or something like that, maybe the money's going there. The real difficulty is number one there is substance abuse regional treatment beds. And as most people know, in Casper, the community came together. They spent their money. It wasn't state money. It was the community's money. The people raised money. The city came forward, the hospital, a bunch of people. And they built this amazing treatment facility in that community that services, you know, anyone in the state can go there. It has a section for men. It has a section for women. And it actually has a section for women and children dealing with primarily methamphetamine. When they built that, we agreed that we would fund it. They're ready to go. They're up and running, and that's the money to keep them funded, to keep going. So they have this great building, great infrastructure. We need to make sure the money flows to that facility. And so that's making sure that the priority goes to that number one first. The other thing the amendment does, it puts in there substance abuse regional treatment beds and crisis stabilization beds. Crisis stabilization beds deal with the mentally ill. Substance abuse treatment beds deal with people with substance abuse. Two different things, but put them in the same section because we really want to get that money to the crisis stabilization beds too. And just real quick explanation of what a crisis stabilization bed is. If you have an individual who has a schizophrenic break or they're attempting suicide, some type of mental illness issue, that individual is normally transported to Evanston to the state hospital. A crisis stabilization beds, when we've created now two pilot projects, one in the western region, one in southeast in the city that we're in here today, in which you, on a voluntary basis, you go to this facility, and in this city here, it's actually a house. You go to a house, actually, that is looks like any other house. And in there, you stay there until you get stabilized. Either you're back on your meds, or they find an outpatient treatment. And it saves the state considerable amount of money because we're not transporting people to the state hospital. So that's what the amendment does. It changes the priority listing. It goes down in straight order, and it adds crisis stabilization beds to the list.
Madam Majority Whip.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I just think it's important for the body to know that this is taking a may to a shall, and it's also taking a list of projects that we identified that were not in any specific order, I don't believe. And it is putting them in a priority order. So it's, you know, it's definitely a policy decision on the part of this body. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Chairman, this summer when my family does our loop through Yellowstone, maybe we won't have breakfast with my good friend from Jackson. But I rise against this amendment, and I'll tell you why. There are a series of problems with this particular amendment. Number one is the original intention of that priority list was to give flexibility for funding based on a priority list that was set forth by the governor. This was not on the top priority list of either the department or the governor at the time it was submitted to JAC. But most importantly, in addition to that, and that's already been mentioned by the Madam Majority Whip, it's also the important thing is that you have an issue of funding here. And what I'm telling you is that it doesn't say how much funding. It just says you shall fund this. But it doesn't say how much. Let's be clear. Normally it should say you shall be taken all available funding in order to fund this. What it basically says is you will put your first dollars to this. Those first dollars could be $5. And then you can move right on past this. It's an issue also in the drafting of this. You haven't put down how much we're going to give. It's not fully funded, and you could end up with somebody interpreting this that, hey, all I have to do is put $5 into it, and now I've done that, and I can move on to the next project. And whereas you put it at the top, you haven't said fully funded in this. I would argue that it does take away the authority of the governor to do the ideas in the order in which he finds the most flexibility. And so I rise on and against this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Mr. Speaker, I would speak against this amendment. In the Joint Appropriations Committee, the deal was that we basically gave their department less than they wanted. In exchange, they asked for some flexibility. Well, I believe this amendment takes away the flexibility to move some money around a little bit to make things balance out. Otherwise, when you start down this priority list, you may get towards the bottom of the list and there's no money left. And I think it's important that the agency be able to have a little bit of flexibility in this. The other thing is, I think this amendment passed in the Senate. We might be able to work out something a little better than the strict language that's in this amendment. So I would speak against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time?
Just a point of order, Speaker, Parchman. On referring to what might happen down the hall or downstairs. I would just really oppose this amendment. The whole idea we're trying to get more bang for the bucks by giving a large organization some flexibility. They certainly have flexibility that none of us know about. They're the experts making the high dollars to run the operation. Let's let them be creative and see how far they can make the money go. So I'd urge your no vote. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Chairman Gingrey, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I certainly understand with giving flexibility to the governor. It's just I'm really worried that that new facility sitting in the middle of the state, they're going to find other needs, and that facility is going to sit empty. And that was a huge commitment that a lot of us worked on to get that building done, and potentially now that building's, you know, we're not going to be using it. And it's extremely disappointing. I think it's our role to set the priorities. That should be a high priority of ours, and I'm just concerned that that facility will go unused.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 1 has failed. We are on third reading amendment number 20 to House Bill 1. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move third reading amendment number 20 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. If you would take out your budget bill, please, the white one, this one, and turn to page 43. I would like to point out what the Joint Appropriations Committee has done before we start discussion on the amendment. If you look on line 11, well, if a little bit higher than that, it is the appropriation that we've just been talking about, the big pot of money. And the Appropriation Committee said on line 11, of the first $4 million, the department shall expend, and then it's $1.4 million and change, for transitioning children receiving services under the developmentally disabled waiver programs to the developmentally disabled adult services. So as young people turn 21 years old, then we're ensuring that they will have services when they move from the child waiver to the adult waiver. And then on line 19, the remainder is to reduce the developmentally disabled children and developmentally disabled adult waiver waiting lists. And so if you do the math there, then it's $2.56 million to reduce those waiting lists. And I think that is terrific. I think it's great. The Department of Health, Division of Developmental Disabilities, when I asked for the information, said that if we do nothing, the waiting list in July will be to the point that it will be 4 years that people will be waiting. What the Joint Appropriations Committee did reduced that down to between 3 and 3.5 years. Had the committee on the Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities continued, we would have been able to further study, was the new cost-based reimbursement system working? But the truth is, there are some flaws in it. It's something that the consultant missed, something the division missed, something the select committee missed, and quite frankly, something that the providers missed as well. But we have locked in this cost-based reimbursement system and not accounted for some of the glitches in the cost-based reimbursement. So what is happening, and the reason this list is growing so quickly, is that when people age out of the program, meaning turn 21, or when they leave the program, generally because they have either moved or passed away, they are not bringing new people into the program, but instead they're using that funding to be able to help make up the difference in the glitch in the cost-based reimbursement system. I don't know how you feel about it, but it seems to me that the measure of a civilization is how they take care of the least among us. And believe me, these are the least among us. They are the ones who have the least ability to take care of themselves, to provide for themselves, and to survive in society. So this amendment is adding another, if you look on line 11 of the amendment, a little over $3 million for the adult waiting list, and 1.6 and change for the children's waiting list. Now, this does not empty the waiting list. It simply brings it down to where people are waiting a year for services. Most states around us have a waiting list, and they are from 6 to 9 months. Some of them are as much as a year. I'm not asking to empty the waiting list, but to simply provide services for families who have, for people who have developmental disabilities. I can tell you from watching families that when you have a child with developmental disabilities and you don't qualify for Medicaid or KidCare, that this could financially devastate a family in a very short period of time trying to meet the needs of their children. So this is not to empty the waiting list, but to simply bring it down to a more humane waiting period, and that is a waiting period of 1 year after they have gone through all of the evaluation process. So sometimes people recognize in their family that they have a problem, but it may be a year and a half before the money actually starts flowing. So I would ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Representative Pedersen, for your first time.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to this. JAC put together a plan of a large block of money to the Health Department, $36 million of which we set aside $8.7 million total for the various to help shorten the waiver plans. And you can see a lot of this information at the top of page 44, right before where we were speaking on the bill, beginning on page 1 through beginning on line 1 through line 7. And then also we put in the total is 8.7. The problem is that I'm not saying that they have had an average increase of 1.68, which is below the amount of money that we put in. But of that $36 million, we left flexibility with the health department. If they want to make this a priority, they can make it a priority. But what it's about is we don't necessarily have the full dollars to fully fund all of these terrific ideas that we have. There is flexibility, though, within the department, $36 million, that is unencumbered by what we've set aside for the preschool developmentally disabled children, and to provide for the additional preschool developmentally disabled children and the transition program from child to adult. The rest of it is wide open for their funding. So they can make that priority list, and they can do this, but currently we don't have the funds to do this kind of spending. So I would rise on and oppose to this amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Folks, if you could just turn to page 43 of your budget bill. This is really you can see on line 11 of your budget bill, Romanet I, of the first $4 million, the department shall, and this is where we give them the flexibility, but we set out some priorities. The first thing is that we've heard a lot of testimony about is about the transition. When kids turn 21, they're kicked out of school, they're off the child waiver, and then they're on a waiting list. So this money in our testimony in JAC, will eliminate that problem. So kids who are on the child waiver, once they turn 21, will move right to the adult waiver. That was the testimony on the $1.4 million. And then you can see the remainder, which would be It's 2.6 or roughly the remainder to reduce developmentally disabled children and adult waiver waiting lists. We still have the lowest waiting lists of anybody around us. So we've done a great job. So pat yourself on the back a little bit for that. We will never get it to zero. And I don't know that that is a goal. The governor doesn't want that goal. The governor never put any of this in his budget. And there was testimony that, I can't remember the percentage right now, but they get calls from out of state. You gotta be careful. We wanna do the very best we can, but we can't do everything. And we just can't do everything. And so I think we've done a good job. We went past the governor's recs. Particularly the one we heard the most about was that transition piece. We took care of that. And then I think the testimony, maybe somebody from appropriations helped me out, the idea was to get these down as close to a year as possible. Now we heard testimony that won't happen, but so we're going to spend 2.7, 4 total on these waivers. I don't think we're, now we're looking to spend another 4. Whatever it is, 7. I didn't add it up, but I don't know. I just urge you to oppose it. I don't think we can do it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask for the dollar numbers that would bring this down to 1 year. Can you imagine waiting for 4 years or 3.5 years to have your appendix out, to have other things? I mean, if you've got real strong needs through no fault of your own, can you imagine waiting that long for any kind of services?
Thank you. We are voting on third reading amendment number 20 to House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 20 has failed. We are on third reading amendment number 11. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Madam Majority Whip, would you come up, please? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, we passed an amendment on second reading regarding a situation with the dynamic compaction in Sweetwater County. And at that time, I had indicated that I had some issues with including funds, specifically this almost $30 million in funds that talked about settlement of claims. And I don't think it's prudent for the legislative body to set a policy or language in a budget bill that addresses liability of any kind. I think that's beyond our purview, and I think it's premature. However, I do believe that we do need to have a structural engineer look at the situation and provide guidance to the Attorney General in addressing these folks' very serious concerns. And so with that, the amendment basically deletes the second reading amendment, as you see referenced on lines 1 and 2, and leaves in $65,000 for the engineer to assess the damages.
Representative Kraft. Thank you, Madam Chair. I look on this as a friendly amendment and would urge your concurrence. When we designed the amendment, we devised some figures which we presented in the amendment, but upon reflection, it really was inappropriate to set a number out of that $20 million that would be appropriated, because once the structural engineer has determined the damages to these homes and grounds, then those monies will come out of that $29 million appropriation for mine reclamation work. So this actually puts it in the order that it really needs to be, with the structural engineer coming in and giving the assessments and providing the knowledge and that missing piece. So I do believe that the good bringers of this amendment have addressed a concern that we had, and I would urge your concurrence with this amendment. Thank you. Anyone else for their first time, for their second time? Oh. How about for their first time, Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand the amendment. I thought I did, but I'm questioning that. The Kraft second reading amendment was the $2.8 million, as I understood it, and that would be deleted. And then this amendment goes into the AML money that has been earmarked for these problems, reduces that by what we can see from 29.9 to 29.8, and then establishes this $65,000 for the review, the structural review. Okay, thank you. On and four.
Anyone else for their first time, for their second time? We are now voting on third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment has passed. Pursuant to 13.3-B, roll call votes necessary. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison. Excused. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan. Excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey. Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim, excused, McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller, excused, Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gilmore, no to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, Amendment number 11 to third reading amendment number 11 to House Bill 1 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 12. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Respectfully, I withdraw third reading amendment number 12 to House Bill 1.
Next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 26. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The good prime sponsor will be back shortly, and you folks who were here 2 years ago remember our interesting and very productive debate on uranium and the future in Wyoming, nuclear power. Folks, this would just take 1.5
Excuse me, Representative
Chair,
Harshman,
I'd like
you,
to
there you
move,
go.
Third reading amendment number 26 to House Bill 1. I'm sorry. And basically, it would give us another, in the School of Energy Resources, and in conjunction with some folks in industry in the state, really kick off the research part of uranium as an energy source, as in our mining and our, and really all the way through the whole process, because this state is not only blessed with tremendous coal and natural gas and oil, but our uranium deposits are really tremendous. And the future is our planet, and our nation, of course, doubles, and our planet doubles in population. We're going to continue to see an increased focus on a clean, renewable energy source, and that is uranium. So I'd other folks here will back up the good prime sponsors here and appreciate your aye vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip, and sorry I was a little late getting back here.
What this does is the Senate's running an amendment to do some stuff. The language isn't quite where we probably need it. There was already language in the existing rules that the School of Energy Resources came up with. We thought a lot of it was repetitive of what was going on in the industry. A fine senator on the other side tried to come up with some better language. I believe he even removed the money. He was so mad about what they were up to in the second reading. They put it back in the third reading. But what this bill does is takes the current funding is $1.9 million, and this takes it down to 1.5, so it still reduces it a little bit. The two amendments, the one in the Senate and the one in the House here, this one in the House under item A, a research program for uranium under the School of Energy Resources at the University of Wyoming, this program shall focus on optimizing the economic recovery of the resource. I ended it there. They had some more language there talking about groundwater monitoring and groundwater restoration. They already do that stuff, and there's lots of government departments that regulate that area already. We don't need that to be the focus of this program. The paragraph B is exactly the same as the Senate version. Paragraph C, there's a small change in that we add some new language that, let's see, let me find the amendment here again. There's just a change that adds existing published information, which no one in the state right now is accumulating on the history of the uranium in Wyoming. So we're asking the school to do that. Have one clearinghouse with existing public information. The Senate version doesn't have that. And finally, item D is the same as the Senate version. E, we've added the words nuclear and uranium. They're going to look at other nuclear and uranium programs as identified by the Energy Resource Council. In the Senate version, they don't have nuclear and uranium in there.
Point of order on that,
okay, okay. Point of order on that anyway. It's, I'm not supposed to talk about the Senate. But the point is I want to have something to negotiate, or whoever negotiates for us in our version. And so I ask for your favorable. It's not favorable consideration. It's no more money. Frankly, it's $100,000 less than they're asking for right now. So I ask for your favorable vote on this amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Speaking on and in favor of the motion, you recall that we decided to have the School of Energy Resources look at what they could do in the area of work that would improve our opportunities with uranium and that resource in the state of Wyoming. And they came up with a plan. They provided it to the Minerals Committee, and we accepted that plan. And I wanted to just take you down the steps on how this stuff goes. If the legislature asks the school to do something, they are responsive and they do that to the best of their ability. But in the case of the School of Energy Resources, the vetting process includes the five members that are people from the energy industry, and a representative from the Senate and a representative of the House approve that program, and then that becomes the process. And so I only had one concern with this bill when it was first drafted, and that was that they were going to direct, I had the word shall, and if you look at the first page of the proposed amendment on line 9, the last word on that was shall, and they changed it to may. We can't get into the practice of telling the School of Energy Resources exactly what they're going to do. That's not the way that whole organization was set up. And so when they made the change to May, I have been supportive of this because we can look at this. We can figure out a way of meeting the needs of the meeting the challenge of what the legislation is asking us to do, but not violating the makeup of this very unique and I think successful organization.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is just a question for the good bringer of the bill. It seems to me that the problem with the nuclear industry is what we should do, how we should treat the waste. And I was wondering if that has been thought about in this at all.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just wanted to say that I support this amendment. I think it's a good amendment. I think we need to move on with this technology. I don't know how many of you have been through Jeffrey City, but we have a large uranium mine out there that's been in mothballs for years. And if we could, we need to, this is going to be an upcoming industry. And that mine, if we could get that open, would create jobs. It would create Wyoming jobs in Fremont County and Carbon County. They got a school that is not new now, but it was in pretty good shape when they shut the mine down. So I would be in favor of this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Landon, for your first time.
Madam Chairman, I did just want to add a little bit, as we have talked about this before. I think we had a lot of consensus on this in the House before, and it basically it boils down to a matter of fact that electrons greatly improve our standard of living, and this type of production of electrons far outstrips any other methods, and it can release a horrendous amount of energy for improving people's lives. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chairman. I just got to respond to that mothballed plant in the middle of the Red Desert near Bear Oil. I tried to get the Minerals Committee to go out and take a look at that mothballed plant, and they chose not to. They picked Jackson instead.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sorry to prolong it just a little bit longer, but I want to answer a couple of the questions. One was on the waste. I don't think anything here would eliminate them looking at nuclear waste. What's not in the documents now is the word nuclear. And so you'll see on line 29, this amendment does insert other nuclear and uranium programs. So I think that would be somewhat permissive if we wanted to look at it. Frankly, I don't think it's necessary because we've studied the heck out of it. We have Yucca Mountain. The amount of waste generated per unit of energy, the entire country would fit on one football field. So it's a very small amount. It's easy to contain. Yes, you wouldn't want to live with it, but I wouldn't want to crawl into a 400-degree furnace either. So, yeah, there are hazards with this, but frankly, you look at the dangers of nuclear cycle versus the dangers of the coal cycle or natural gas or solar panels, for that matter. They all have higher accident rates per unit of energy generated than nuclear power. So just keep that in mind. Even solar panels do. One other comment. I think I commented on it. The word nuclear is in this amendment. It's needed. It's something important. We've talked about it a number of times. So please support this amendment. It gives us a little bit more to direct the School of Energy to look in not just uranium, but frankly, I've talked to him for over a year about getting deeper into this new nuclear technologies that are being developed outside this country right now. No one's doing a lot in the U.S. Our university actually has the potential to take a lead in this. It would take a lot more money than we've got in the appropriation now. But I would like them to at least have a nuclear engineer on staff to start talking about this and getting down the road towards the nuclear future, which is the 21st century.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 26 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 26 to House Bill 1 has passed. Pursuant to House Rule 13-3-B, the ayes prevailed. A roll call vote is necessary. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Blake?
Excused.
Blake, excused. Bonner?
Aye.
Brechtel?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Buchanan?
Aye.
Bird?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Childers?
Aye.
Cohey?
Aye.
Connolly?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Davison, excused. Dirks?
No.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Gingery?
Aye.
Goggles?
No.
Hales?
No.
Hallinan, excused. Hammonds?
Aye.
Harshman?
Aye.
Harvey?
Aye.
Illaway?
Aye.
Yagi?
Aye.
Jorgensen?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Lockhart?
Aye.
Lubnow?
Aye.
Madden?
Aye.
McKim, excused. McComey?
Aye.
Mercer?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Millen?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Patton?
Aye.
Peasley?
Aye.
Pedersen?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Philp?
Aye.
Horberg?
Aye.
Roscoe?
No.
Semlek?
Aye.
Shepperson?
Aye.
Stewart?
No.
Stubson?
Aye.
Teeters?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Throne?
Aye.
Wallace?
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan?
No.
Zwanitzer Dave?
Aye.
Mr. Speaker?
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 48 ayes, 8 noes, 4 excused.
By your vote, third reading amendment, third reading amendment number 26 to House Bill 1 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration. Oh, and before we go on to that, Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I know it's third reading, but could I have a privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Thank you, members of the legislature. If you look in the north balcony, you will see the leadership of our state's FFA chapter and their advisor and former intern in this body, Scott McDonald. So if you'd please welcome the FFA officer leadership team in our state.
Welcome to the People's House. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 13. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I withdraw third reading amendment number 13.
The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 14, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 14. Ladies and gentlemen, this would create a select committee on wind energy. There would be 7 members from the Senate and 7 members from the House, 2 each from the Revenue, Minerals and Corporations Committees, and 1 member at large. And then on to page 2 of the amendment, subparagraph C. The committee shall study the following as they relate to regulation and taxation of the wind energy conversion industry. Statutes relating to the authority of the Industrial Siting Division of the Department of Environmental Quality. Statutes relating to the authority of the Public Service Commission. Statutes related to county zoning authority. Any relevant federal statutes that may preempt or limit state or county authority. And other issues relating to the wind energy conversion industry the committee may determine to be relevant, including the appropriate agency or agencies as may be necessary to regulate the industry, how such regulation should be funded, the process for decommissioning of facilities and wind generation tax policies, avoiding duplication of conflicting requirements and effects on state trust lands. Ladies and gentlemen, we had House Joint Resolution 9 pass this House, which was the resolution to the counties saying we encouraging them to update or adopt regulations related to wind energy development as it relates to their land use plans. I found that to be a really helpful discussion on this floor and in both the House and Senate committees when I presented the bill. I learned that the Industrial Siting Act applies to, I always knew that it applied to large facilities. And the statute said $100 million, and now it's up to about $185 million. But the way those are defined, it's defined fairly specifically. It has to have that cumulative impact. The Public Service Commission Act deals with facilities and utilities, and those two things are defined. The definition of facility does not necessarily include a single wind turbine. utility can be limited in its definition, in that if you sell power, if you don't sell to the consumer, you may not be a regulated utility. Well, based on my limited knowledge of those statutes, and seeing that there is a real concern out there about counties' land use regulations impeding some elements of wind energy development, and that there are some preemption issues, federal preemption, with regard to eminent domain and transmission, I think it appropriate that this legislature establish a select committee to study these issues. And if we've got the Revenue Committee suggesting that wind generation tax is a potential interim study topic, I believe that right now it is time to start studying this and understanding what regulations and authorities we have, how they interact with each other, how they conflict, and the best way to do this is with a select committee for members of these various committees to get the best look at it and build the best legislative knowledge base about that. And I would urge your adoption. It's got a little money in it, $25,000 to the LSO to implement the purposes of the act.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Majority Whip. I rise in support of the legislation. I'm confident that the joint revenue committees could take care of this, but it would take almost as much additional time as it would take for a select committee. A select committee would do a great job. I think it's a good idea. We have plenty in the revenue department to keep us busy in an interim without this, and we could concentrate on this. I guess if I thought there was a flaw in the bill, it'd probably be a few too many people on it. It's hard to get around to 14 people's ideas in one meeting all the time, but I'd urge your support of this.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We had a debate the other day about things that we ought to be doing in the energy circle, and this was proffered at that time as an alternative, and I thought it was appropriate that I stand up and say I'm in support of this, and I'm one who knows the difference between watts, kilowatts, megawatts, and gigawatts, and that's what we're talking about. The wind generation potential in this state is very large, and I think it's a new issue to the state, and it's probably worthwhile to have a broad base in the legislature who understands what that industry is all about and its impact and benefits for the state of Wyoming.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Certainly rise in support of this. I'd like to just make the body aware that we heard testimony in the Revenue Committee from one of the commissioners in Carbon County. They expect right around 3,000 windmills in that county alone. So this, we're just on the beginning of this, and we one time we may have had handed out on the floor the wind patterns of Wyoming. We're very favorably positioned with those patterns, and so this is just in its infant stages. So we need to get a hold of it and basically steer it in the right direction instead of letting it control us on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time? Mr. Speaker,
Madam Chairman,
for your second time.
Thank you. The only thing I would say is I know we all have lots of work to do, and we have select committees and task forces. I think this is just a critically important issue that we study. Thank you.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Third reading amendment number 14 has passed. Pursuant to House Rule 13-3-B, roll call vote is necessary. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel. Brechtel. Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Yeah.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan, excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim, excused. McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 3 excused.
House third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill number 1 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 15. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, on February 4th of 2009, we passed House Bill 68, property tax, homestead tax credit, out of this House, I think with 54 votes. If not 54, it was 52. This amendment is essentially House Bill 68 in a Section 300. But if you go to page 2, you see that the exemption that the credit that is given is limited to $4,000 rather than the $4,400 that was in House Bill 68. So you can either get a credit against the assessed value of up to $4,000 or up to a 50% decrease in the assessed value. The appropriation is on page 3 of the bill. It's $36,200,000. And it comes from funds appropriated to the Capital Building Rehabilitation and Restoration account. There are approximately $37 million in that account now. And that account was created by the 2008 Wyoming legislative session. Why take money from this account? I'd like to share with you my thinking on this. We have a 5% statutory reserve that is profiled on the goldenrod at about $96 million. The governor can look at the 5% statutory reserve when he is determining what to do under his budget authority under Section 311 of this budget bill that we passed last year. That says every 6 months he is to look and determine whether the revenues can meet the expenditures. General fund revenues can meet the general fund expenditures that we passed in this budget. If he determines that that cannot happen, he has the ability to cut. And his ability is he shall give notice to the state agencies concerned and reduce the amount appropriated to prevent a deficit. Now, he can do that of the general fund dollars. And as I said, with the budget reserve, the 5%, the $96 million, he can look at that to determine whether he has the revenues needed. But the governor cannot spend those dollars. He cannot shift them around like he can with other dollars. We have the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account that has about $350 million in it. Today's goldenrod, or yesterday's goldenrod, showed, I think, about $39 million that would go in there based on the House and Senate bills that were out there. So the LSRA would be up around $400 to $425. Now, I believe it's appropriate to place another $100 million into the LSRA, the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. And when you look at the all other bills, and excuse me, let me grab a goldenrod. As of February 12th,
It was $39,793,000 that would go into the LSRA, the Stabilization Reserve Account. And if you look at page 2 of the Goldenrod, you see the other bills that are out there totaling $77 million. Of those $77 million, $64 million are two property tax bills, House Bill 68 and House Bill 234. That would leave $13 million of other expenditures that would show up as general fund expenditures. By decreasing what we show as other bills on page 1 of the Goldenrod, other 2009 bills with appropriation, and that's here at $77 million. If we cut $64 million from that, that increases the LSRA $64 million, and it exceeds $100 million. So if the target is $100 million new money into the LSRA, the Legislative Stabilization Account, we can hit it. And we have the $96 million 5% statutory reserve. If we assume that natural gas could be at $3, and that would be an average, and oil would be at $20, we would need $200 million to fund the budget we passed last year. That's not the worst case scenario. It is a worst case scenario, much worse than we are now. I believe it's prudent that we approach it that way and look to do that. So we have to take those property tax bills off of the bill profile. In doing that, we lose funding for the property tax homestead credit. And I believe that we can fund that then through the capital restoration account that we have there. The capital complex project is estimated to be well over $100 million. You saw the amendment today talking about, well, is it simple or what classical, simple, archaic, I'm not sure, but we have been talking about this capital, the new office building for years and the capital restoration. Certainly we need to do some restoration in this capital. And think back to when the legislative stabilization account was created, the reserve account was created. It was created for a couple reasons. One was we had huge revenue flows, and another one was the LSRA was created as a legislative stabilization reserve account, a rainy day fund. And the target was $1 billion. Okay, that's what we talked about. Let's get it to a billion. It's never exceeded half a billion. The 1% statutory flow of the severance tax into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund that we did 3 and 4 years ago, we did that in increments, 0.5% 1 year and 0.5% the other year. That 1% equals about $130 million for 2010. Well, I'm suggesting these things because when we did the 1%, the thinking was we have huge revenue flows, we need to save money, let's make it automatic, and let's take it off the general fund profile. Because when you take that 1% and you earmark it to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, it no longer shows up as revenue in your general fund where those dollars normally flow. So there were a variety of reasons to do that. We can achieve savings we need to meet a worst-case scenario coming into the next biennium in our next budget year in 2010. And I also believe it's important to share in some of this revenue back to the citizens through the Homestead Exemption Tax Credit. And a way to do that and still achieve that LSRA amount of $100 million is using these funds.
If revenue comes back, we can continue to flow dollars into the capital rehabilitation and restoration account, and recognize that we have revenues to do that, which is what we do. When we have high revenues, we do extraordinary things with it that we don't normally do in ordinary times. I still believe it's appropriate to give the tax relief that we voted on with a vast majority in this House. I don't believe that we have to say it has to be general fund dollars, and if we don't have it and we can't achieve our savings, we can't have it. I still believe we can have both by using that rehabilitation and capital restoration and rehabilitation account. So I would urge you to vote for this amendment. Thank you. Madam Chairman, one more thing. I'm sorry. I'll go for my second.
Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, thank you, whoever you are. I just have one question for, as many of you know, the LSRA and the capital restoration account are very dear to my heart. I'm tickled with the LSRA. I think it's been a great program. I just have one question for the good speaker. On line 11, it says, shall revert. I am hoping that I assume that if any appropriation is unexpended and it shall revert, that it reverts back to the capital building restoration account. With that, I hope you will. He nodded, yes. With that, I hope you will support this.
Representative Dave Swanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Whip, Majority Whip. I was just curious, if this is to fund House Bill 68, where was this plan when we all voted on House Bill 68? Did we not have another method that we were planning on paying for this bill? And I apologize, I was absent that day. If you look on the register, it shows that I was excused, but I would have voted no against the tax exemption. It just seems not right to be borrowing from an account that we have been putting money in for several years, and we have heard over other sessions of the fact of the need to redo our capital building. And so we had this great idea to pass this tax exemption, and now at the last minute we're coming up with the fact that we're going to pass a tax exemption, but we're going to steal it out of another coffee can. So I was just hoping maybe the sponsor could address that for me. I'd appreciate it.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have two issues. Two questions are totally separate from one another. I see what you're doing with the changing the means of finance with this, but wouldn't it have been possible to use the capital building construction account as a backup to the legislative stabilization reserve account? In other words, if that account got so low that we would move the savings to another savings, it seemed like we're doing that. Moving a savings to a saving makes more sense to moving something out of the general fund. And the other thing was that, somewhat troublesome, but you changed the exemption from 4,400 to 4,000, and was there any thought given to restoring the 3-year residency requirement? It seems like now that we're getting back to the kind of the same number, but we're getting it back by reducing 10% or so from everybody's exemption and including the 3-year residency that, we thought as a committee we had good reasons to have that 3-year residency in there, and the implications of that, I guess I don't want to get into, but those two questions, I'd appreciate answers to. Thank you.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I I appreciate the excellent overview of our budget and revenue picture with regard to how we make a decision, and I think a very important decision on property tax.
And just to start off, I don't think this discussion should be framed on a premise of which is more important, where we could take the money from or such things as that. I entered into this discussion of property tax with looking at what I thought was a realistic picture of our budget picture at the time, a snapshot, if you will. And when I voted for that, I really thought we were in a position that our state could afford to give this entitlement to our citizens. And I sure hesitate to call this reform, tax reform. Now, as this revenue picture becomes clearer, again, I'll try to do a little overview and remind all of us when we came here, or while we were packing our bags to come here, we were anticipating a $500 million surplus. And by the time JAC met to decide on how to spend that money, $250 million disappeared off the table that we were assured was clearly money that was ours in excess. Now, what happened to that $250 million? And I don't know if we've really given that message out to the body and to our citizens. And the only way I can describe this, and I think I'm allowed to say this because I say it in one word, this goes back to the FILP chart, right? The chart that shows our revenues based against our expenditures. And what happened to that $250 million is that at that time we had a gap. We were clearly spending more money than we were bringing in. And it took $250 million to bring those lines together again. But the good news is that left us with $250 million. Now, bringing us to today, we will hear that $200 million is an appropriate number for us to add back into our LSRA. And I would say that as this picture becomes clearer to me, this number is woefully inadequate, and that I think it should be closer to $300 million. Now, with that said, we would, of course, want to ask the question, what have we been doing all week? And I can't really tell you an exact answer to that, because that is a very good question. And we clearly could be digging ourselves into a hole that we may not get out. And at this point, I'm struggling with my ability to go back home and say that this was a wise use of our money, that I think there is a high degree of expectation from my constituents to balance these needs. And when I think I can explain to them that when I looked at the final picture, that strong needs of our state far outweighed a very small benefit in this tax exemption in their checkbook. So with that, I would speak against this amendment. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Madam Majority Whip, thank you. One of our top priorities as legislators when we came to this session was property tax relief. I did sign on to this amendment with the thought that if House Bill 68 did not pass the other body, that we would need something. But as I review it, I do have to tell you I have several concerns. And one of the concerns is, if you look at page 1, lines 15 to 21, in this particular section, it says that the person who wishes to claim an exemption shall file a sworn statement. I believe this body has to remember what happens to many of our citizens who are in the greatest needs in our state, who are too proud or do not want to let someone else know their needs. This concerns me, that maybe we're putting an extra burden on them, that many who need it will not access it. I like some of the ideas in this. I like the idea of trying to put some extra money into the LSRA. However, I've just cautioned this body, what do we really want? We do not know the results yet, and from the other body, what is going to happen to House Bill 68. At this point in time, even though I'm on the bill, I'm not sure that I can support it from the standpoint of that one section. I am concerned about our citizens, that we are perhaps not providing them the property relief that they have so desperately asked us for. So I ask you, as you ponder this amendment, take into consideration what we've already voted on, and then vote as you see is best for the people of Wyoming. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. What was just described is in the bill that passed. This is language from that bill on Section B. So, and this says that also, in the same language, says that the assessors will mail this application out to the people so they can mail it back in. But this is exactly how it's in the bill.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Speaker Pro Tem, I think, excuse me, Madam Majority Whip. Oh, it's one of those days again. Anyway, my comments. The good chairman of education was correct, but besides that, I signed on to this amendment also because the elderly and disabled tax relief bill died, and I'm a firm believer that even though we are in a financial crunch, that we really need to provide a tax relief program, whether it's property tax or anything else, because of what is happening in this nation. And that's exactly the main reason why. And both the elderly and the disabled, but the elderly in particular, have their life savings almost cut in half or wiped out if they're living off fixed incomes or savings. And then even those that are still in the working sector, if they've invested into the market, as many of the larger companies do, they've had their savings disappear, and we have not addressed why the property taxes are going up so much. You know, we have an idea, but the citizens are quite verbal about saying we got a problem and we need to do something about it, and I would not disagree with that. So I think this bill is important, or this amendment is important to bring at this time, and I urge you to vote for it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, I'm a little conflicted here. I guess I'm conflicted about the values and the changing times of our needs and what it is that we want. It's with interest that for years, you know, I've been hearing around here the level of debate about the need for the repair and rejuvenation of this building. I even know of one of our members here on this floor has mentioned something about a mold issue, and, you know, we've been hearing about that for years, that if we don't do something soon, that and the expense of things now, that one of these days the expense is going to be incredibly enormous, and so, you know, does a little planning need to be done? I just wonder that need is now negated somehow or another about the need for somewhere around $259 per property owner forgiveness for 1 year. You know, it's with interest that for years I've been hearing around here about the need to move state employees from rented properties to something the state owns. You know, thereby somehow or another paying like the prison instead of renting space in some place like Texas that we put the prisoners in our own facilities and use our own people, that type of thing. Should we not be building and constructing our own properties? Not to say that should be done now, but what about the plan that's in place and what should we be doing going forward? And now that need has somehow been negated for a one-year mini-reduction in property tax. I don't get it. Things somehow are different across the state. I've heard a little bit, not a resounding amount of people clamoring for property tax relief, but what I have heard from the maybe 10 or 15 people is, what can the legislature do about the rising cost of property tax from year over year? Well, for one thing, some of that has short-term answers to it. Property values, without doubt, are stagnating, or at least maybe in some cases going down, and resulting property tax will prevail. At least for the short term. But it's with interest that year over year, the level of what I see is important to this body and what's not, and how those versions change from year to year based on what it is that comes forward our way, and much of it resolves, of course, around the money. The only strategy I think that we can claim is that of priority dyslexia. You know, when we talk about property taxes, as I've mentioned before, with the case of federal income tax, people don't really understand, see, you know, the amounts all that much, because it's taken out of the paycheck. They go home with what they make, less the federal income tax. Same would be true if we had a state personal income tax, which I hope we never do, or a state corporate income tax, which I hope we never do. People wouldn't recognize it. You know, with the case of paying sales tax, you go down, you buy a shovel, and you pay the resulting percentage or whatever that state and county tax is. People don't recognize it so much, but the thing that they do recognize is property tax. So when they see a difference from one year to the next, they complain about it, and they say, where is my money going, and what's happening to it, and why are my taxes going up so much, forgetting that their property went up along with it and the resulting increase in property taxes. There is an answer in some of this, and many counties won't appreciate this, but, you know, with the case of the county portion of the property taxes, counties, like the state has learned to live on its mineral wealth. Counties have learned to live on those expanding property taxes, and so now when there's a clamor for a reduction in property tax, somebody says, okay, we have to pay the counties back. Was there ever consideration in any of the counties, except for maybe one that has tremendous sales tax of value, or used to, of the county saying, okay, we're going to knock it down a mill or two? I don't know. It wasn't much of a conversation between the public in my area and the commissioners or the treasurer or anything in the particular county that I live in, that maybe you should knock the mill down a penny or two, a mill or two, and we can enjoy something here. But instead of asking them what the money is going to be spent on, that outside of the school dollars, instead of asking them what the money is being spent on, they simply say to the legislature, reduce my property tax. I mean, there is some real misunderstandings in this state, but I do believe I am conflicted in this and trying to figure out what our priorities are and why we can't stay the course.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I'm reading a issue brief from one of the major national organizations that has to do with how states are facing this financial crisis, and it opens with a sentence that says, we're facing the gravest financial crisis in at least a generation, and while all levels of government are affected, the fiscal pain is felt most acutely by the states. I think we're doing a heck of a lot better than most of the states in this nation, but one of the paragraphs that just jumped out to me as we were talking about this is this one. It says, states' responses to this crisis are critical to the nation's overall economic and fiscal health. Those states that have eroded their fiscal capacity with overly generous tax cuts or unsustainable commitments to new spending can arguably exacerbate the next downturn. Some economists argue that cutting spending and further trimming taxes can prolong downturns by increasing stresses on citizens resulting from decreased social services at the time they need them most. I think that expresses quite vividly the caution that I would urge all of you to approach this with.
Representative Jorgensen, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've seen so many tax rebate or break or refund proposals. I'm not sure any of us know what we're looking at. This, every time I say that I'm supportive of tax refunds on a need basis, someone can show that they are poor, and they shouldn't be ashamed to say they're poor if they're poor, I'm told you can't make people tell you that they're poor or something like that. This is not a need-based thing at all. The thing they swear to is that they're the owner of the dwelling, it's their primary residence. They haven't claimed a tax exemption for it, and the dwelling's been occupied since the beginning of the calendar year. There's no need. There's no sorting out of people who truly need a break because they've been in the house 30 or 40 years. They got it from their parents or they bought the place for $20,000. Now it's worth $600,000 and they can't afford the taxes. We have programs so they can defer in those instances. But a refund to somebody like that makes some sense. This, I don't see the value in doing this if it consumes any of the money that we currently have, whatever coffee can we've put it in. I urge you to oppose the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I need to just express a little difference that I didn't promise that I would stand for a tax relief program as such in my pursuit of serving here with you. I did suggest that we address, however, the volatility, the unexpectedness, and introduced a bill. And this House accepted that proposition, and it was passed the House. I also suggested, however, that I would not have any kind of a proposition that was on the backs of the county government, city government, or education. And so having that commitment meant that my suggestion had an expense to it that would come out of the general fund to make sure that the county government, city government, and schools remained whole. That bill, of course, as some of you know or may remember, I know it's close to your heart, was bill number 234. We also had at that same time the other commitment, and that was the commitment to a tax relief program. And as we've discovered not from expenditures necessarily, but rather from the unexpected loss of income, we can't afford both. And so I think it's pretty well understood that we're not going to have both in 2009. So what we have now, though, is the proposition of looking at the study of our tax policy. Or I should correct that and say we should be looking at the development of a tax policy. This proposition is a part of a political adjustment, and I support it, as a part of a continuing tax policy discussion that I think we are now entering into for a good, deep discussion. Appreciate your opportunity.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Majority Whip. I'd like to remind the body that we have a bunch of issues out there, and I'm not going to tell I want to do that so you can make up your own mind on this issue right here, what you want to do. But we do have a tax relief for the elderly that good representative from Cody said died, and the other, it did not die. It just didn't get enhanced any. It's still on the books. People are still able to get, many of them, $800 elderly on a tax rebate, whether they paid the tax or not. That's out there. They have to request for it, and they have to be eligible for it in those things. We have the needs-based one that's working through it's over on the Committee of the Whole on the other side that is enhanced again this year, a little better, that people have not availed themselves. However, we had a much higher use of it this year than we did last year, and I think that'll grow. So there is a needs-based one out there. So we've done that. There's a veterans exemption out there. A lot of the veterans can get an exemption on their property tax or their automobile tax without the only qualification is to be a veteran being discharged at a certain time. We have the reverse mortgage that's out there that's a very... a very good tool that could be used. It's not being used very much. We have the county option relief tax that's going to work its way through this body, where it's a loan program that the counties can offer that get up to half of their tax back for a while. The other thing you want to remember, that this refund, whether it's House Bill 68 or this one, is in essence paying a homeowner, giving a homeowner some mineral tax money that's been collected. Even if we use this one, that capital facilities income that's out there was mineral money. So in essence, it's what our great state up there way far north is doing. It's the same thing, only in a small scale and limited to homeowners. So you have all those things, and I just wanted to remind you that those things are out there as you vote for this one. And I think I'll vote for this one just to keep it alive, but certainly I wanted to remind you that we have all those other things, and I might have missed some, but we're not without tax relief in this state, and regardless of what we do with this.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Madam Majority Whip, when I go home, I think I would have a hard time going home and saying that, well, yeah, we're going to build a building for more state employees, but we couldn't help you out because your property taxes are rising so rapidly. To me, that doesn't make sense. I think we should go home and say to our people that in these uncertain economic times that, yeah, we'll help you out. We'll help you get through at least the first part of these hard economic times that may be coming, and also help you out with your rising property taxes. State government will still be in good shape, and we can do it. We can help out the taxpayers, and I would just ask you to vote for this amendment and help them out a little.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am in favor of tax relief for the elderly and the disabled. And last session, we worked on that, and we expanded that program. Currently, in the housing market, we are seeing a 6 to 8% drop in the prices. And in a year's time, that's going to be reflected in your property taxes. If you look at a possible $300 a year relief for taxes, and then look at that on a monthly basis, that's $25. If you look at that on a daily basis, it's 83 cents. I'm not sure that for 83 cents a day, we should be doing this and perhaps putting our state in a type of jeopardy. Thank you.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to go ahead and I'll be brief because I know we're about ready to vote and we're all ready to vote, but I am going to go ahead and support this. In my mind, I've already been an aye vote on property tax relief, and I've stated why. I've knocked on doors. I've talked to the people in my district who want it, who need it, and who are interested in it. This amendment is simply about where exactly the money's coming from, and I guess I look at it as your word is your word, and when you say you're going to do something, the good speaker told us the vote that those bills came out of this house to go to the other body, and I've got to stick with what I've done. I don't really think it's appropriate to change in mid-course when really all this amendment is doing is discussing the funds and where they're coming from. And I also think that property tax relief, in many ways, and when we put money back into the pockets of our citizens, we're helping them out. I mean, we can quibble over however much, but it's a help. In economic times, when we're seeing a downtrend, I think it's a good thing. So I'm going to be true to my word. The bills passed out of this house, as I said, the good speaker told us those votes. If you want to go check your vote before you vote, I'm going to be true to my word and make sure I do and am consistent on my vote. Thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the good representative from Laramie County because she hit right on what I think is a key issue. I don't think this is simply about where the money is coming from. I think that is what it's about, and that is the fundamental question, because I came down here as a supporter of property tax. I voted for those property tax bills to come out. I was committed to making property tax a priority of the revenues that we saw this session. What I did not promise my constituents was that we were going to dig into savings when we admit that we're going to need savings in the future, when we're talking about increasing the amount of savings that we need, and yet now we're going to turn around and fund a property tax payment out of savings. It seems like a schizophrenic policy that I can't go home and explain to the folks in my district. It's not a matter of building a luxurious office suite compared to property tax. What it's a matter of is savings versus a property tax. And we did. We in this chamber did what we said we were going to do. We made a priority of property tax, and we sent it down the hall. And if we can't get the legislature as a whole to support that, if we can't say that property tax is a priority out of the current revenue stream, then we probably shouldn't move forward with it. Because what this amendment means to me is that this is going to be property tax at any cost. And that's just not a step that I'm willing to take. So I'd urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor of the amendment? Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam, or Madam Majority Whip. Mrs. Majority Whip. Great debate. Where was it on House Bill 68? We kind of had a little bit of it, but to answer the questions, House Bill 68 requires the sworn statement. This amendment is House Bill 68 just as it was. There's nothing different. So I would urge that not be a reason. I don't believe at all that we're digging a hole we may not get out of. I don't think we're even close. And I hear schizophrenic policies. You can look at a lot of policies that we have in this state that seem to be conflicting. And this is certainly one of them. But think back to the sales tax on food. Why did it take us so long to remove the sales tax on food? There was a good reason to tax food people eat? Was that it? The fundamental issue to me is, are we telling people, we know how to spend your money better than you do? And I do not believe in that philosophy. I believe in letting the people spend their money. It's mineral money, sure. Who owns the minerals? The state of Wyoming. Who lives in the state of Wyoming? We do, and the citizens of the state. But to hear that some industry or the source of those funds determine how they can be used, I don't buy that argument. Is it $300? It's $300. And believe me, to the retired elderly people who call me, $300 is a lot of money. And it means a lot to them. And you may not have the pressures that you have in your communities that I do in mine, but they are significant. And yes, we should address those increases, but we haven't figured out a way to do it and do it in a way that everybody can agree to do it. So what else do we do? Well, here's your tax that you owe. We want to give you a credit so you can use those funds as you see fit. You don't have to not buy food so you can pay your property taxes. That's what's happening in my community. It's not a function necessarily of the property tax itself. It's a function of entitlement benefits that they don't increase, that people live on very meager means. So why shouldn't we? Because we have huge revenues. And is $36 million going to make a bit of difference to us in the next biennium? I suggest no. But I also suggest that we can save. And
In today's economy, if you went out and asked your constituents, would you rather we remodel the Capitol or give property tax relief? What would they say? I'm all for remodeling the Capitol. It needs it. But where do we go when we remodel the Capitol? We either go to the Hersler building or we go somewhere else. It's a long-range plan. We don't need this money next year. We may need the money in the future if we ever do the grand plan that we would like to do for the renovation. But I think those are the things you have to consider. Why restore the three-year residency? I don't see a reason why. I couldn't figure out what the three-year residency achieved in the first place. Why $4,000? Because there's $37 million in this account. I think it'll probably cost us about $33 at $4,000 a credit. So there's some cushion there because everybody would get the full credit. You wouldn't have to prorate anything. And then any reversions go back to that fund. I have conflicting thoughts about this too. But I come down to the basic realization that I am willing to stand up, and I have named this as my number one priority from the opening day of this session, and I'm going to stick with it to the last day. That this is my top priority, and I think it's appropriate to take the money from this fund. Thank you.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Amendment number 15, the ayes have prevailed pursuant to House Rule 13-3-B. Roll call vote is necessary. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbuto. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Dirks. Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds. Harshman.
Excuse.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim excused. McComey.
Aye.
Mercer. Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Excused.
Shepperson excused. Steward.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne. Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 39 ayes, 16 noes, 5 excused.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 15 to House Bill number 1 has been adopted. The next amendment for our that's right. Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some guests up in the balcony that just came in, and they are responsible for the book that we got yesterday, and it is fitting that we had a great discussion on Galling's prints today. Would you please welcome my good neighbors and good neighbors to the state of Wyoming, Bill and Carol Ward.
Yeah.
Welcome to the People's House. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 18. I'm looking. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I withdraw amendment, third reading amendment number 18.
Yay. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment 21. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I understand I have 1 minute, so I'm going to move very quickly and move Third Reading Amendment 21 to House Bill 1. This is funding for municipalities. In the 2006 budget bill, we had a base amount of $10,000 per year that went for direct funding for every city and town to be used at the discretion of those city councils. The two smallest towns, one has a population of 18 and the other has a population of 4, got half that standard amount. So that was in 2006. In 2007, the supplemental budget bill added another $14,000 to bring the total to $34,000, which is a real critical thing for our small towns in Wyoming. Then last year, in 2008, we had a second reading amendment that did exactly what this amendment proposes to do, approve a base amount of supplemental funding for cities and towns of $20,000 per year for the discretion of the local city councils and the smaller towns at $10,000 per year. So basically what this is doing is what we attempted to do in 2008. I don't believe I'm going to say anything further to that due to the time and the fact that my clock is ticking. So I would urge your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? We are voting on third reading amendment number 21 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 21 to House Bill 1 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is number 27. Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I move third reading amendment number 27 to on third reading to House Bill 1. And what this does is an attempt to put some more money into account 1 of the Water Development Fund. You know, when we hit the caps on at $155 million on severance tax that went to several entities, after that then we kept appropriating additional monies to the highways, to the cities and towns by more than they would have got, but the account 1 and 2 stopped growing on the water account. Water being so important in this state that we brought this, and especially account 1 now is really hurting a lot more requests for the development of water than there are funds available. And so I bring this amendment to you to put $6 million into account 1 as long as there are reversions that would take care of that. As we go along, the auditor is instructed to put that money into water account 1. Right now, it looks like we have at least $3 million that would do that on the profile. But the potential is more than $6 million, but the request in this is to put those $6 million, when they come in from reversions, into the water develop account 1.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I certainly stand in favor of this. A member of the Select Water Committee for the last 4 to 6 years, we definitely need this. This is feasibility studies. It's an initial review of things. We have many water projects across the state of Wyoming in each one of our respective areas. So stand firm on this and support this amendment.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Madam Majority Whip, I would ask you to vote for this. We have a lot of potential development going across our state, and we desperately need to provide infrastructure for water in the state and to develop our water. And I would just ask for your support at this late date. Thank you.
Anyone else for your first time, for your second time? We are now voting on third reading amendment number 27 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Third reading amendment number 27 has passed and requires a roll call vote. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales. Hales excused. Hallinan excused. Hammonds. Harshman excused. Harvey. Illaway. Yagi. Jorgensen. Landon. Lockhart. Lubno. Lubno. Lubno excused. Madden. McKim excused. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Millen. Moniz. Moniz. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen. Peterson. Philp. Korberg. Roscoe. Roscoe. Simlick. Shepperson excused. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Thompson. Throne. Wallace. Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 51 ayes, 2 noes, 7 excused.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 27 has passed. Third reading amendment number 27 to House Bill 1 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 28. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I move third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a directive to the state agencies identified in this amendment to submit to the governor a plan to operate with a reduction of 5% in state funds and a plan to operate with a reduction of 10% in state funds from the amounts provided in each agency's budget. These are general fund dollars, operating funds. That's what that reference is to Chapter 48, Section 2. Those are operating dollars as opposed to capital construction. I believe it is very appropriate to back up and enable our governor in any way that we can to exercise his authority under Section 311 of this budget or Title 9 to make cuts when those general fund revenues do not meet the general fund expenditures as identified in Section 311 of the budget. I believe it is also an appropriate exercise of legislative power to the executive branch agencies, directing them to do these things because it is critical. And they're the ones who, within their agencies, know their operating budgets best, and they are working with their chief budget officer, who is the governor. And I believe that this is simply a strong statement saying, please do these things, please provide these plans. So if times really are tough, we're ready to take action. The governor is ready to take action. And then when we come back in 2010, we will have additional information also. And in my 10 and a half years here now, I've never seen this type of recommendation from an agency. You do see priorities in the budgeting process, I think this is a very worthwhile exercise. And that it's important that we give our governor the tools he needs to act as our chief budget officer in the interim. So I would ask for your vote on 28. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader Whip. We're really calling you a lot of different names, but we like you. They're all good names. I just stand in support of this amendment. We have worked over the last few months with the executive branch and
all of the different aspects of budgeting for the upcoming year, and I think this is an important tool that we need as a legislative body, so I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Second time? We are voting on third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 28 to House Bill 1 has been adopted. The last amendment for our consideration today is amendment number 29. Chairman Berger.
Madam Majority Whip, I move third reading amendment 29 to House Bill 1. And I do not take this lightly. I just believe that this is an amendment that would help us, again, as we move forward and working with the budget during these economic times. It offers the legislative body the opportunity to make a distribution directly from the severance tax account and move it into the LSR, the Legislative Stabilization Reserve Account, up to $100 million. And basically the language that we've added to that is to make certain that if we don't enact on this fund, that those monies will go into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, which has always been a high priority to this legislative body. So I'd ask for a favorable aye. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip, on and for the amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe it is important to adopt this amendment this year for this main reason. If we don't act now, and we come back in February in 2010, and we want to take some of this 1% severance tax flow that goes into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, we will have lost the flow from July 1 until that bill, that action would become effective probably around the 1st of March of 2010. That's 9 months of $130 million. That could be approximately $100 million. And if things really get tough over the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, it is appropriate to take this flow and earmark it within the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account that says you can only spend it if you appropriate it next session, and if you don't, it goes back into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. It goes to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund on April 1st of 2010. And I urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The thing that troubles me about this is that it's moving a tenth of $1 billion one step closer to the spending stream. And, you know, it could be at the first sign of discomfort as far as spending. And, you know, I really feel there's probably a score or more of us in here that really feel that we're not making any money on the permanent fund anyway, so why not spend it? Happy days will be coming down the road any time now, so just let's not go through the discomfort. I don't know. I get these graphs from the Appropriations Committee. I don't know if you guys read those graphs. I like to read graphs. And, you know, when I read those graphs, you know, I don't see that we have a problem of saving too much money. You look at those graphs, and it shows we're spending too much money. And this is just a way of, in a sense, dis-saving in a permanent sense, because you know when this hits that spending stream, it's going to be spent. And I have my doubts about the wisdom of this, and I urge you to resist this amendment, because when it's gone, it's gone. We have future generations to consider here, and this is not the way to do it. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. On and against this amendment, we're saving this money now. Just continue to save it. Yes, the economy's burning in many areas around us. It may make it here. It may not make it here. But if you start draining the tank of this water right now, it's not going to be there when we really need it. So on and against the amendment.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One of the things I do appreciate about this amendment is its truth in advertising. where it's underlined mineral severance tax diversion. And we're diverting it from our future and from our children's future. And that's a commitment we made, and that really bothers me. You know, we have a budget session coming up, and I think that we'll act and react at that time. We have no clearer crystal ball than anybody else has. And it's oftentimes to think the doomiest and gloomiest scenarios just when things aren't so well. But we have no idea but what that things are going to level out and things might even be picking up. I've heard forecast as early as April, May, and as late as fall. And you know, I just think it's all over the board. I don't think we know what's going to happen. But from what we can see now, and there is a lot of uncertainty in the future, but from what we can tell now, we've positioned ourselves pretty well. We have money in the legislative reserve account. We have money in our 5% contingency. We've taken steps to this body over the last several days has very carefully scrutinized proposal after proposal. We haven't seen some of the large expenditures that we have in the past. And we know we've put judiciously tucked money here and there in the past, and we can weather a bit of a storm. I'm just afraid that if we put this into this spending account, that we will spend it. And that opportunity for the citizens of Wyoming, ourselves, as well as our children in future years, to reap the benefits of putting a little away now for the future time when the interest off of this will sustain our tax structure and our well-being, is short-sighted. So on and against the amendment.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, maybe a little history isn't supposed to go here now. We took to the people of Wyoming our severance taxes when we decided we were going to put our severance taxes on and increase them. And the people of Wyoming voted on that, and I also voted to say we wanted to save 1.5% of that money. Now, that's not 1.5%. That's over 25%, I believe it is, of the, and it varies between the coal is 7% severance tax and the rest is 6. But we're talking, the people of Wyoming spoke and said that we should do that. And we in Wyoming in this legislature, in good times, have said we wanted to put more in. So we took and we passed bills and we put more in. And then when we hit the bad times started to get tough, why we changed the legislation and didn't flow that flow through, and we used it to help us balance our budget and continue the services that we are providing to the people of Wyoming. We voted today on some services for some of the very needy people and some of the other things that we've done. Then when times got good again, we voted it in with Senate File 21 a few years ago, and we started flowing more money back. And in the meantime, before we did that, and even while that was going on, we had some budget surpluses left over, and we put more money into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund than the 2.5% required. So we have been loading that Mineral Trust Fund when times were good, and when we felt threatened, and times were bad. Why, we said, okay, let's look at this flow. What this amendment does, it says we're going to cap it at $100 million. We're going to set it aside. Hopefully, we're not going to have to use it. The rest of it will continue to flow into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. And it also has language that says if that money by a certain time isn't utilized, it flows on into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. And who makes that decision if that's going to be utilized or it isn't going to be utilized? We, sitting right here, ladies and gentlemen, not those spendthrift government employees that we always hear bad things about, those people that'll spend every penny you give them. These people sitting right here in these desks are the ones that will determine what the fate of that $100 million. On and for the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, we did some projections earlier in the session, given the state of the economy and trying to look at the Craig reports and recognizing what's happened in the recent future, and basically said we wanted to have a target of $200 million in the LSRA and base that upon a fairly bleak assessment of what we rely on in the form of our revenue, which is principally, you know, a full 70% of our assessed valuation is natural gas and oil. So we said $3 gas and $20 oil, and that's how we got to our best estimate that $200 million in the LSRA would recession-proof us, if you will, in these uncertain times. I want to call your attention, you know, to the goldenrod. We have projected there $39 million towards that $200 million. But I want to also remind you that is not money that we leave here and that it's in there. That's still projections through the rest of the year. So we could lose all that on paper and be starting with our goal at zero and wanting to work towards $200 million. And the reason I support this amendment, and I thought about it a lot, because in years past, as many years, I think this is my seventh year, there have been attempts to do this in the past, and each time I have resisted those attempts, just being of a conservative nature. But I see on the horizon, like the good representative from House District 30 said, you know, we have a cloudy crystal ball. We don't know what the future holds, and we want to talk about budget cuts and both the executive branch and, as you saw in the amendments today, the legislative branch are taking a very serious and careful look at budget cuts across our state government. But my question to you is in this next year of uncertainty, if our ability to make budget cuts is not enough and we find our Wyoming economy in a situation that is analogous to the national economy is today, because we've been told that we lag behind the national economy. It takes us a while to get into the recession, and it takes us a while to get out. I believe that it is sound, conservative, fiscal, prudent policy to adopt this amendment. The language that was added in this new amendment, you'll note that the prior amendment was withdrawn. But if you look at lines 23 through 27, just to give us all a little bit more comfort in this situation, the prior amendment took the money and it capped it at $100 million and it put it in the LSRA and it left it there. I'm with you on the idea that, gosh, if it's in the LSRA, we can come back and spend it. Simple majority. And that's true. But I guess if we don't trust ourselves enough on that, then we added this next language to protect us from ourselves even more. And it says, funds deposited to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account pursuant to this subsection shall not be expended without our future action. We have to take an affirmative action when we get back here in a year to spend that money. And if we don't, then on April 1st, 2010, it automatically goes back into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. Why do I think that's okay? Well, for one thing, we're not earning a lot of interest on our deposits into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund now. And I would rather do this and not need the money. The good representative from House District 55 said, we'll save it so when we need it. Well, we're going to save it for when and if we need it. We will have it if we need it. If we don't, it will go back. But the thing that scares me, two things that scare me the most, if we don't at least protect ourselves or have the ability to protect ourselves, is if the spending cuts are not enough and if the economy goes further south, I would rather go home, and I think regardless of party or anything else, this legislature would want to go home and say to our constituents, yes, we all have been in charge of this for so many years,
We spent money in the good times, but now we're not able to balance our budget. Oh, but we made a sound fiscal decision to save a little money out of the PMTF to recession-proof ourselves. And the other thing that I don't think we'd ever have any trouble going home and explaining is if the budget cuts aren't enough and we don't save a little money to recession-proof ourselves, I would never want to go home and say, well, we're looking at other ways of raising revenue because we didn't want to spend any of this other money. What are the other forms of revenue? What are you going to come up with? I don't know about you, but I remember 10 years ago, before I was here, I remember my representative that was my predecessor coming back and talking about how this legislature was thinking of a personal income tax. I don't think I'll have a constituent that'll say, gosh, I'm glad you saved that extra 1%, or that you didn't save that extra 1% of $100 million out of the PMTF that year. I'm happy to have a personal income tax instead. I don't think I'm going to hear that. And so for those reasons, I'm on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I think those are reassuring words, that last sentence, but we've heard that before. And in 6 years, all I've seen, all I've observed, is if we have money, we're going to spend it. The potential pressure when we come back next year from folks who may have suffered a 5% or a 10% cut and others is going to be intense. And I guarantee you those words will be meaningless. So you've got to decide what we're going to do. You've got to get ready. This is a year of transition for a new biennial budget on and against the amendment.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, earlier this year, this body was addressed by our senior senator to Washington. His remarks are always welcome and well received in this body, and what I appreciated the most was if Washington would exercise fiscal responsibility and sensibility like Wyoming did, the country wouldn't be in the shape it's in. And shouldn't all bills deal with one issue specifically, nothing hidden in them, wouldn't Washington fare better if we had a policy like that? Now, I recognize that in our Constitution it says that bills dealing with an appropriation of general funds, you know, of general appropriations, that it can deal with certain other issues. But I wonder, since 10:39 this morning, with about an hour break for lunch, we have seen amendments coming very close to being discussions that should have been examined by a committee with valid testimony, with opportunity for public review and discussion, and with ample time for universal legislative deliberation. This one is a seismic shift in the state's revenue and savings strategies. For example, to enact the current strategy of the statutory flow of the nearly $479 million that has gone into the permanent mineral trust fund by statutory flow over the last three fiscal years. That's $479 million additional dollars into the permanent mineral trust fund over the last three fiscal years took the usual deliberation that this legislature is so well known for and appreciated by that good senator. And now, in a late arriving third reading amendment with a simple aye or no vote, a huge strategic shift can take place. And for what reasons? Let's think about it. When the statutory flow began with the enactment of what it is that we're talking about, in the first year of collection in fiscal year 06, $162+ million was placed into the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund in that 1 year alone. To put $100 million into a very fluid account like our Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, now referred to as Legislative Spending Reserve account, simply for the expenditure by the state makes very little sense to me. Government appetites are unquestionable unless the money is not there. We are far from a crisis, ladies and gentlemen. A crisis is the large state on the West Coast with a $20 billion shortfall. If you think about that state, mostly from failure to exercise sensibility and responsibility over the past few years by its governing entity, and particularly in regard to expenditures. Think about it. What now for them? Federal government bailouts? You know, Wyoming is in incredibly good shape, and it's just a matter of management. To put $100 million more into our Legislative Stabilization Reserve account at this time, our rainy day account, is simply putting another $100 million on the table to spend. Government will spend every dollar it has plus $10,000. If the financial fortunes of this state reverse, then we will deal with that. And we'll deal with it at that time, but only then should we deal with that. This is not to say we should not plan for the reductions in state expense, as it probably, more than likely, will be necessary for at least a short period of time. In fact, it is taking place now. We just had the discussion a few minutes ago, and we know the actions of our chief executive officer of the state. For those of you around here for the past few years know that my discussions in this regard have been noted. In private enterprise, or in your personal lives, in your family lives, in your businesses, what do you do when the financial picture looks a little gray? Do you crack the piggy bank open at the first blush? Or do you wait until you really, really need to bust that thing open and use the money that's in there? The $478 million into the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund over the past 3 years by this statutory flow, what does that do for us? Well, that puts an approximate general fund flow equal to about $24 million a year. Now, that may not seem like much when we're talking about the sums that we are, but ladies and gentlemen, that's $24 million a year forever and ever. To take $100 million off the table, we'll put about another $5 million per year into the general fund. Doesn't seem like a lot now, does it? But, well, a few things for you to consider. If you think that this statutory flow of $100 million and then reverting back will stop at $100 million, wait till our appetites grow and our revenues really decrease, I can tell you that it won't stop at $100 million. It might not seem like a lot to you, that $5 million, but here's another thing for you to think about. If it doesn't seem like a lot to you, what will it seem like to your children and your grandchildren and the people that will be in this legislature in 25 years on and against the amendment?
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip, if I got it right that time. Speaking on and for the amendment, for the purposes of this, lack of confidence seems to prevail. If we don't make the protection today, we'll spend it. We'll spend it. Repeatedly we have heard, if you don't do this, you'll spend it. As a financial counselor for a number of years, I had difficulty trying to tell people and get people to believe me to say that it's necessary to plan. We would take a part of their funds and we'd plan with that part and say, let's put it into long-term bonds, zero coupon bonds, no interest paid. They just grow and matured. So I could take $14,000 and buy $25,000 bond. They didn't have to do anything with it. And it was going to mature at $25,000. But now hear me carefully. You could cash it in at any time and spend it. So it was liquid. But it had that piece to it that if you don't do anything with it, it'll be there and it'll be $25,000. The other portion of your account you can do with as you want. Here we are with 4.5%. going into the Permanent Land Income Fund. We're not touching that. That's staying intact. And it's going to get paid. And it's going to get paid first. And then we have an opportunity to add to it when it's time. We're going to take approximately a third of what is available to us, $100 million, and say $100 million is going to go into our legislative account. And if we don't spend it, if we bother ourselves to accept the responsibility that we don't spend it, we preserve the opportunity of meeting a need. And if your crystal ball is cloudy, how in the world do you know that you don't need it? If our crystal ball is going to say to us that there is a doubt, we can put it in the account, save it for 1 year. And then if there's a need, it's available. If there's not a need, we don't have to spend it. And if anybody's going to leave this body on the basis of age, I hope that it's first that it's me. But as I look around, I have trust and faith in the integrity of these people that occupy this room, that you won't use it unless you have to. And if you don't use it, it's going to go into the Permanent Land Income Trust. How can we do better? How can we be more responsible than that? Can I explain that when I go home? Give me a shot. You bet I can.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Madam Majority Whip, you know, this this statute that's referenced in this amendment, 3914801, that language is in a bill that I passed. I passed the bill because I thought it was a good idea to make a steady stream of money going into our Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. And it has done very well, as been said before. Many hundreds of millions of dollars have gone into our Permanent Mineral Trust Fund because of that statute. But, you know, I think we need to manage our money and manage it well. And I think we need to be prepared that in the future, it looks like just because of the price of gas, the price of gas is $3.08 today, when normally what Craig had projected was that we would probably have about $7 gas today to get an average of $3.75. That's what their average is for the whole year. And typically we would have high gas prices for these winter months. But we're not seeing that this year. And on top of that, we have a record high reserves of natural gas. So it looks like that the price of gas is going to be low. And that will affect us, and it'll especially affect us with our ad valorem taxes here in 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And we need to be prepared for that, that it, things, the revenue may not be as good. And it might be, we might really be strapped for cash. But when I passed that bill, I didn't intend that we would just lock away the money and cause catastrophic changes in state government. I think we need to kind of level things out here, let some of this money go to the LSRA, where at least it is available. And when it is in the LSRA, it can be spent. I'll admit that. It can be spent. But who are we afraid of? We're afraid of ourselves. Why are we afraid of ourselves? Why can't we put it in there and keep it there? In the past, we've appropriated many millions of dollars to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund just through direct appropriations. And I think we would do that again if the economy improved and our revenues looked like they would improve. But for right now, things aren't looking that great. And I think we ought to be prepared, and I would ask you to vote for this amendment.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Yeah, I think I got it. No, she's not Majority Floor Leader. House Majority Whip, there you go. Anyhow, not too many of you remember, or some of you may remember, the history of LSRA, and I will not go back into it. The hour is getting late. I'm for this amendment. Yes, we did take some money out of the capital restoration account. We're not ready to restore the capital, but I'm confident that when we're ready, that we'll have the money there because we're going to save some. The statutory money that goes into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund can be removed, but I don't think we want to do that, and I can see a lot of resistance on that. The LSRA was set up as a rainy day fund, and if we have the discipline, I think that's where this money ought to go. It's our money. It's the state's money. It's the people's money. But we're the ones that can pull it out of there and spend it. And if we don't want to spend it, then we're not going to. There's $353 million in there now. That's been put in over the period of years. We haven't spent it. We've had discipline. And I think we'll continue to have discipline. And I urge us to go ahead, pass this amendment. It's a good place to put it in for the interim. We'll come back, and next year in January or February and March of 2010, and we'll have an opportunity to put it into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, or if things have gone to the the devil in the end, we may have to spend it. But at least it's a savings account that we don't have to get in and touch the permanent mental trust fund. On and for.
Chairman Childers.
Madam Majority Whip.
On and for the amendment, for many of the reasons people that have spoken for it and against it. But my main reason for doing this is it's a temporary fix, because I really feel like that people in this House and hopefully on the other end need to consider that we're going to have a substantial decrease in our severance taxes. But what you also need to remember, for every dollar of decrease in severance taxes that we're going to see, you're going to get an equivalent amount, actually slightly more, decrease in ad valorem taxes from the minerals industry because of the decreases in prices. And I think the Appropriations Committee has done a good job to present to us of what our expenditures were in the last budget session, but it doesn't go quite far enough. Because of those ad valorem taxes and the huge decreases we're going to see, you need to think about that the schools, the counties, and all other local governments are going to have a substantial decrease in their revenues, because that's what the the schools get a lot of extra money, but all these others, it's mainly ad valorem taxes. So we're going to have to figure out how to help them keep their programs going on, or help analyze how they're going to cut their programs. So I would really hope, besides this temporary fix, that we need to seriously look at a new revenue and expenditure study, because I think we're going to find that our revenues are substantially below what our expenditures are. And we did this several years ago, but we need to analyze it from the standpoint, how are we going to proceed? I don't think we can with the recession that we have now. But I do think that we need this amendment to provide the monies to help us prepare for next year.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I was taken by one comment made in this debate, and it's been a good debate. But the Majority Floor Leader alluded to the fact that this would be used if the 5% and the 10% cuts in spending wasn't enough. And I don't, you know, if there was something in this budget amendment that said that, I would feel less nauseous about this amendment. But I don't think it does. I don't think it does trump that. I think that you know, we could be coming back here a year from now, and we could be faced with the prospect of, you know, do you want to cut the budget 5% or 10%, or should we spend the money? You know, if I have some success with my therapist, I might be wanting to run for election again. And I might be tempted to spend $100,000. You never know. It just depends on how bad I want to get elected again. But I guess I'd like to have, you know, even if the Majority Floor Leader doesn't want to have a second chance to talk on this amendment, to tell me what the intent is in regard to the interface of the 5 or 10% budget cut relative to his priority of spending the $100,000. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time? Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I'm contemplating that question. A 5% budget cut can bring $87 million. 10% is twice that. I didn't understand the 100,000. The 100 million. So we can make projections based on $3 gas, $20 oil. We need 200 million, but then you've got the statutory reserve. Is the statutory reserve enough? Do we spend the statutory reserve? That's one question. So you need another 100 million in the legislative stabilization account, and then I believe potentially the other 100 million that this amendment speaks to. But I just wanted to point out for my second time two things. That aside from any of the severance tax flows into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, we have directly appropriated general fund dollars of $411 million into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund over the last 6 years. We also have spending policy reserve accounts that have put another $190 million into that account. So of the spending policy reserve account and the direct appropriations that we voted on this floor and said we want to put this money into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, over $600 million. So I pushed back a little bit on the concept that we're going to spend everything we have, because we've invested $600 million directly by a vote of this body into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and through those spending policy accounts. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time? Chairman Landon.
Well, Madam Chairman, I had to grin at my good majority floor leader, because I was going to make some comments on what he said, and I still am going to do that. I think I don't want to scare ourselves here with dark clouds of depression and scare ourselves with an income tax. That was the comment I was going to make. I don't think we need to do that. I think we really need to carefully think about what our condition of our situation is now, and what it like. And we're looking into the future, and that's proper. Some comments were made about putting more money in the permanent fund when times were good. And we had difficulty doing that. It was a fierce battle every time we did that. I can remember one year when we tried to put $200 million in, and by the time all was said and done, we put $20 million in, and we had diverted another $80 million to be put in the next year, and it never happened. It never happened, and that's when times were good. And so when the amendment was statutory change was brought on to direct some monies in, I think that a lot of the House and the Senate overwhelmingly supported that, and we've been able to do that and continue to do that. And I would advocate that times are still good. Just look what we have done with this budget. We have the ECA, the 4% state employee tax, tax relief, capital facilities constructions, more for highways, emergency medical service, community colleges, public transport, economic development account, a pipeline in the northern part of our state. All of these are tremendous things we're doing for our state. And one other thing that this is a good time to do is this is a good time to invest. Right now, assets are on sale. This economic situation has brought down the price of things to where if you have some money on hand, I think that it's a good opportunity to put some in. It will really return something into the future, and that's what we're talking about with this money as our future. It was asked, how do we know we won't need it? And I almost hate to share this perception, but I think it's true, and that is because of these previous times that I have seen a very difficult to save money into the permanent fund. We've built this wonderful infrastructure that we could call our permanent fund, and like a highway, if we don't maintain it, if we don't put something into it, it's just going to get potholes in it and become worn out. And so I think that it's important that we keep making this effort, because we certainly aren't able to inflation-proof it. Madam Chairman, your hair style.
If you can't tell the difference between me and the majority whip, Mr. Chairman, I suggest you might have a seat.
The abrupt change in your hairstyle is shocking, but we'll go on from there. I'll just end by urging the body to exercise discipline here. Let's build the future assets of the state and try to put off immediate gratification, because this really is building our future, and it's a commitment that we made to ours and our children's future, and it's a real opportunity to continue that. I have seen this legislature deal with difficulties whenever I came in years ago, along with many, including yourself. We knew how difficult things were. We found the money. We made things work. That was one of the challenges and the rewards of serving in times when times were tough. So whether they're thick or thin, whatever the future is, we will deal with it. And so on and against the amendment.
Chairman Cohey, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The good representative from Sheridan County, you know, he recognizes that the fiscal nature of this body will certainly be sensible and responsible, and I agree with that. This body has always been responsible, but yet with $100 million or even $20 million or $10 million up for grabs, there just isn't one person in this room that does not have or will not have great ideas for needful and necessary things, at least in their minds, or the people they represent, or the people that they speak on behalf of. My first budget session here, as with many on this floor, was in 2000 when the 01-02 biennial budget was being discussed. The state, this legislature, was needing $127 million with which to balance its budget. Yet, the spending amendments were just about as thick then as you found them the day before yesterday and today. We were looking for money, and we still had spending amendments on our desks. The revenue and expenditure study was mentioned by my good friend from Park County. A remarkable document about that same time, 11 or 12 years ago, in the form of Tax Reform 2000 was produced and essentially ignored. It lays on some dusty shelf somewhere. I would suggest it to be responsible reading for just about anybody on this floor. But in other words, the need to address what should have been this state's tax policy, what should it be in the face of declining or even disappearing mineral wealth? Sound familiar? That bullet was dodged by the fortunes of good timing in that year 2000. And we more than likely will dodge it again, but hopefully not with a less than well-discussed and not well-thought-out policy such as this. With another $100 million profiled, what will be the will in this floor to say no, to just simply say no? With another $100 million profiled, what will the will be to say no to needful and necessary things, at least in the minds of some people? I say the time to say no is right now.
Anyone else for their second time? Question being called. We are voting on third reading amendment number 29 to House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 29 has passed, and it does not require a roll call. Division being called a little late. All those in favor, please stand. Third reading amendment 29 has passed. House Bill 1, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbudo. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly. Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery. Goggles.
Aye.
Hales excused. Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno excused. Madden.
No.
McKim excused. McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer. Miller.
No.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlek.
Aye.
Shepperson excused. Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Buchanan, aye to no. Miller, no to aye. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 41 ayes, 12 noes, 7 excused.
House Bill 1 having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 1 has passed the House. Ladies and gentlemen,
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Up in the balcony to my right, I would like to introduce you to two of my beautiful grandchildren, accompanied by their father, David, and my husband, Alan. Mr. Speaker?
Yes. Go ahead.
Privilege of the floor. Could we take a minute and thank the Appropriations Committee for the work that they've done on this supplementary budget?
Please. Members of the Appropriations Committee, thank you very much for all your hard work. We appreciate it. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we still have a little business to conduct here. Reports from standing committees, and then we'll appoint a couple joint conference committees. Messages from the Senate.
Message 234, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 62, Charter School Law Amendments. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, House message number 235. The budget bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1, the bill is not engrossed and the adopted amendments are being transmitted with the bill. Senate File 1, General Governmental Appropriations, ayes 24, noes 5, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 95, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne, signed representing Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 62, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Korberg, Throne. No, Patton, Peasley. Signed, representing Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 23, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubno, McComey, Teeters. Excused, McKim. Signed, representing McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 6, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, signed, representing Childers, Chairman.
Appointment of Joint Conference Committees. The Conference Committee on House Bill 25 will be Illaway Chair, Peterson, and Thompson. House Bill 25, Illaway Chair, Peterson, and Thompson. House Bill 89, Brown, Chairman, Brechtel, and Stubson. House Bill 89. Brown, Chairman, Brechtel, and Stubson. Consideration of bills on general file. Just kidding. Committee announcements. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Tuesday after a wonderful weekend upon noon recess. We're going to talk about Senate File 2, engrossed, insurance financial reporting requirements, Senate File 104, engrossed, life insurance, limitation on dependent coverage, and Senate File 45, improvement and service district directors.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, on that Joint Conference Committee announcement on House Bill 89. It is House Bill 9. House Bill 9 is Brown, Chairman, Brechtel, and Stubson. House Bill 25 is Illaway, Chair, Thompson, and Peterson. Sorry for the error. Chairman McComey, re-referrals.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to re-refer Senate File 23 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Are there any other re-referrals? Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request re-referral of Senate File 73, Gillette-Madison Pipeline Project, and Senate File 68, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, to Committee Number 2.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Semlich, go ahead with your committee announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number five, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet Tuesday, February 17th at 8 a.m. to hear Senate File 69, Fertilizers, Senate File 37, Antifreeze and Petroleum Products, Senate File 82, Weed and Pest Districts Bidding, and, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 105, Weed and Pest Districts Unfair Competition. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1 Judiciary will meet 8 a.m. on Tuesday to hear Senate File 140, Drug Court Funding, and Senate File 84, Aggravated Assault Choking.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to announce that your Committee Number 2 will meet on Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. in Room 204, and we will hear re-referred bills, Senate File 56, School Finance Appropriations, Senate File 124, Education Reserve Funding, and Senate File 146, NCAR Supercomputer Funding. And if we have other re-referred bills, we will also meet Monday at noon upon recess. Thank you. Tuesday upon noon recess.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet Wednesday upon adjournment in the evening in Room H10, where we will take up Senate File 46, engrossed, school facility lease fees limitations, Senate File 35, youth access to tobacco cessation programs, and Senate File 52, engrossed, school bus seat belts.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 10, Labor, will meet Tuesday morning at 8:30 to finish up work on Senate File 54, physical therapist licensure, and to reconsider Senate File 92, long-term care access.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment on Tuesday, February 17th, in Room H17. To discuss Senate File 60, engrossed, National Guard Youth Challenge Program, Senate File 76, Snowplows, Emergency Lights, and Senate File 57, Engrossed, Rental Vehicles.
Are there any other announcements? Ladies and gentlemen, good work this week and today, especially on the third reading on the budget. That was some very good debate, and everyone was engaged. Have a wonderful weekend and drive safely, and we'll see you back on Tuesday. But before that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader and then Representative Thompson will lead us in singing Cowgirl Joe. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we adjourn until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 17, 2009.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned until Tuesday morning, February 17, 2009 at 10 a.m. Representative Thompson.